Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
You're listening to Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly. Now, in August, the US issued sanctions against 11 officials from Hong Kong and mainland China. And despite assurances by Hong Kong authorities that non-compliance with US sanctions would not constitute a violation, banks are not taking their chances against Washington. Well, that's according to a report that's due to come out from FinNews Asia. And we catch up now with Richard Otsuki, and he's the chief editor at FinNews Asia, to find out more. Richard, thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat with us again today.
Always a pleasure.
So tell us, I know you've been very busy out there in Hong Kong, and there have been a lot of developments and a lot of discussion around the non-compliance with US sanctions and what this means for banks based in Hong Kong. What's the latest? I understand that you're working on something this week.
So it's been around a month and counting since Washington first issued sanctions against 11 officials in Hong Kong and the mainland over the national security law in Hong Kong. And since then, banks have been rapidly making a lot of moves to figure out how to comply with this law, whether fully or partially, based on their own needs and approaches. And of course, at the same time, there's also the national security law itself, which forbids actually compliance with foreign sanctions. So there's some contradictions that these banks have to deal with. And they've been working closely with both external experts as well as hiring internally for compliance staff.
So what does this mean for the banks operationally? What have they been telling you?
So just at least on face value, the OFAC is the entity that deals with U.S. foreign sanctions. What the rules say is that anyone dealing directly with the 11 individuals involved or entities where those individuals own a majority shareholding in could be caught under the new sanctions to the Hong Kong Autonomy Act under the assumption that the transaction is considered significant. Now, this is obviously a little bit vague. It involves scale and frequency as well as the nature of transactions. But at least from reported incidents, there have been already a handful of banks such as, I believe, HSBC, Citi, Standard Chartered, as well as even Chinese banks that have opted to comply with U.S. sanctions. Not necessarily due to political reasons, but simply because of their need to access the U.S. financial system.
We're speaking to Richard Otsuki, chief editor of FinNews Asia. So, Richard, what does this mean for clients?
On the operational side, what banks have opted to do is first and foremost do a quick screening. So in the case of Carrie Lam, I think she reportedly said she had issues with credit cards, something as simple as that, but she shrugged it off. So just on the surface, straight away, maybe banks may opt to close accounts that are personally owned by on some of these sanctioned individuals. But from there onwards, they'd have to do a lot of screening. As you guys may know, there's a lot of family-owned businesses in Hong Kong. So there are a lot of entities where there are shareholders that could be the sanctioned individuals. And it's not limited to just individual sanctioned individuals' shareholdings. So if an entity has multiple sanctioned individuals and their collective shareholdings equals above 50%, they could also be caught under the radar. So the screening process is quite important. And the way banks have done it is the smaller ones might have opted to do this in-house. So they might have maybe a handful of clients, maybe 100 or a couple hundred clients, and they just comb through this manually. And that shouldn't be too difficult. Maybe even the CEO could almost memorize clients' names on a first-name basis. But once you get to the larger bank, it becomes more complex. There's too many entities to do this manually, and it becomes very costly. So, for example, they've opted to work with some data and solution providers that have tons and tons of data for them to avoid, let's say, for example, false negatives. So you could have a Joe Wong in Singapore and a Joe Wong in Hong Kong and a Joe Wong in Tehran, and you could accidentally turn away business because you got the wrong Joe Wong. And once you get too many wrong Joe Wongs, it can be quite costly for business.
So how are they then making, once they've made these decisions on these accounts or the relationships that they have with these customers, obviously it's perhaps a tricky conversation. How are they moving things forward from there?
From the client's perspective, we've heard people like, for example, Bernard Chan, which is the grandson to the heir of the Bank of Bangkok. He's also a senior pro-Beijing politician in Hong Kong. He said, for example, just by walking in to certain banks, he's been turned away. So there's that level where even accessing the bank at a desk might be difficult. And in certain cases, and I won't cite any specific examples, but we've heard that banks may consider it at a transaction level. So perhaps they may be holding certain assets in custody, but not necessarily transacting for them or moving assets for them from one place to another. Or in other cases, maybe they're only dealing with them in non-US dollar assets. So maybe only in Hong Kong dollar denominated assets or renminbi denominated assets. You know, local banks are one of the areas which people see as perhaps a little bit of a gray area that could fall out of the radar, as they have less international exposure and less need to have financial access to the U.S. system. So different banks are taking different approaches.
So what else are they doing in addition to screening?
Some of the things that might be of interest to your readers in terms of prep work people are doing is, for example, screening for future possible sanctions. So there's lists of names of people that could potentially fall in under the radar. As the Hong Kong Autonomy Act quite clearly states, it covers people who are actively enforcing the National Security Act. Some of these public acts can be tracked, and you can see whether certain individuals are at greater risk because of their public or actual support of such legislation. And in such cases, banks have actually reviewed these client accounts and assets and perhaps structured their investment portfolios in a way that can allow them to unwind quite quickly. So one thing to note is that even Washington is quite, could I say, perhaps understanding in this scenario, whereby they acknowledge that unwinding certain business accounts and assets cannot be done immediately in certain cases. So they'll perhaps name a sanctioned individual and you as a bank or whatever could be caught under the radar. And they will offer a certain sort of licenses, sort of exemption licenses, whereby you could be given 1 year or so to wind down these businesses. And in certain cases, even 1 year might not be fast enough. So banks don't want to take the risk of falling under the radar and paying large fines. You know, it's widely reported there's a French bank that was fined $9 billion in one scenario for violating sanctions. And no bank wants to fall into that kind of net. So they themselves are restructuring investments to prepare to wind down when necessary.
Okay. And compliance, Richard, it's not just about what's happening with the U.S., is it?
No, not at all. Not at all. So at the same time, banks have to worry about the national security law as enacted by Beijing and Hong Kong. The interesting thing is, of course, that simultaneous compliance with both is actually impossible, because the latter, the national security law, actually prohibits entities in Hong Kong, actually anywhere in the world, enacting foreign sanctions against national security interests. But as we've seen throughout the years, you know, global banks, like many businesses, they operate in a world filled with contradictions. You know, there's 200 or odd, so, you know, UN recognized countries in the world, and they all have various different jurisdictions that do not necessarily agree with one another all the time. So in most cases, banks are taking this sort of risk-based approach, whereby they see whether or not their existing business position is worth a certain amount of risk. So if your U.S. dollar business or if your business is linked with these sanctioned individuals only represents a slither of your overall business, probably not worth the risk. But if your exposure is rather high, the decision is not as easy to just quickly wind down some of these accounts and assets.
And with everything that's happening at the moment, Richard, what's the overall sentiment like in the financial services industry in Hong Kong at the moment?
To be quite honest, there's still a good amount of optimism. You know, there's a strong pipeline of IPOs coming in. Some of it from the Nasdaq delistings, but also some of these marquee names like Ant, very big sort of rock star fintech giant. On the other hand, we've also seen digitalization. We spoke last month with you guys about sort of the adoption of digital banking. So even though there is social distancing still ongoing and people are maybe more reticent, more reluctant to access bank branches physically, there's still activity that's going on. But nonetheless, it cannot be denied that there's a lot of headwinds coming ahead. You know, we've seen certain firms either mention their consideration of exiting or perhaps exiting altogether. So, for example, we saw SBI, the Japanese brokerage company, say they will wind down and close their businesses here. I believe it was also Daiwa Capital. Daiwa Securities, which also said they might consider transferring some or all of their operations into Shanghai should some of the unrest continue. So there's still some headwinds ahead.
We've been speaking with Richard Otsuki, Chief Editor of FinNews Asia, here on Primetime on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.